You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. Welcome in. This is Country Roads Confidential at earsports.com, a CBS sports podcast. I am Mike Casazza. Wrapping up wasn't a busy week, and that wasn't uneventful either. It's West Virginia. It's never uneventful. Here to help me figure it all out, Chris Anderson. Chris, second half of the Big 12. Signing day. NCAA narcs. Texas and Oklahoma. It's quite a grab bag here. We could have sat this one out. Didn't feel right. In all directions, there's something going on right now.
Yeah, there seems to be a handful of things we can give some hot takes on, so I don't see why we wouldn't take the opportunity to hop in there and give some amazing opinions on all this stuff.
Let's go basketball first. West Virginia is still playing, 13-9 overall, 2-7. Chris is the exact same record as last year at this point. Were you aware of that?
No, I was too busy scrubbing that podcast from last month where we said how this was going to be different than last year.
Man, how about that? Again, I have no recollection of that happening. I think I made some good points that day, though, that it was not going to be the same. But here they are. And what strikes me as I was doing some research about this, because I did find out, 13-9, 2-7 last year. And they played Texas Tech. And Bob Huggins changed the lineups, put Kobe Johnson in, Taj Sherman was back, Pauly Polycap started, kind of shook things up a little bit. They beat Texas Tech, they snap a losing streak. 3-7, mild talk at that point about maybe getting things right and getting to the NCAA tournament. Not a whole lot, but some. Walk, run, one of those things. Maybe crawl before you walk before you run. However, Chris, because past is prologue a little bit, Bob Huggins changes the lineup. Things work. They get a win. Lost on Tuesday to TCU. Tomorrow, Oklahoma, man, it's a must win or a can't lose or a both, I guess. I could talk about the damage that might do. But I want to ask you a question here from the Hey Mike post from mbarnett16. Hey Mike, I'm seeing a lot of discussions about rotations lately and was curious. If you could update the rotations, who would be your starting five? Your first guys off the bench, and your ending five. What lineups would you like to see more of? Obviously, this is matchup dependent, but I was curious. Lineups and rotations have been an obsession of ours and fans throughout the entire season because things have been kind of wonky at times. Starting five, final five, and then different lineups. Let's kind of peck at that a little bit here. I want to go to the ending five. That's okay. You've made that point before. That's probably more important than starting five. I have no idea who West Virginia's ending five would be because it has been so scattered all season. The closers, if you will, you could look at metrics for who's been the best clutch players, crunch time players, so to speak. What has it gotten West Virginia except a lot of losses late in games? So maybe their best clutch players aren't their best clutch players. So you kind of have to disregard that. And I understand it's matchup dependent a little bit based on their team, but all things equal, Chris, I guess who would you want to have on the floor right now based on the performances we've seen for the rest of the season at the end of games, number one? And number two, how hard is it to come up with that configuration?
It's nearly impossible. Like, I mean that seriously because of everything you just talked about. I like the word wonky. I thought you were going to lead me down a path of asking me what my starting five is, and maybe my starting five answer leads to my closing five answer, because this is going to shock some people, probably make them mad based off what's being posted on the message board. I would not change the starting five. And here's why. So many of those guys, maybe all five of them, are so streaky. Like the ceiling for all five of them is so good. Like when Jimmy Bell is at his best, he is unstoppable. When Eric Stevenson is making shots, it's unbelievable. When Keedy Johnson is playing defense, staying out of foul trouble, and is able to get to the basket, it's over. When I mean, you guys know my Spanish Emmett Matthews thing. Trey Mitchell, again, maybe the guy with the most NBA potential on this team. All five of them have had their moments this year, but they've been kind of few and far between. And I would go with like my starting five and literally just be like, all right, are you in this game or not? Because, and Huggins felt that out last game where he went in a few minutes and was like, wow, these guys are not in, and changed things up. And the same went with Texas Tech. And I think we've seen that with some of these guys, and you have to make decisions, because sometimes guys are engaged, I think is the right word. And if they're engaged, they're going to be part of my closing five too. But I want to use that starting few minutes to kind of see where everybody's at. I mean, I don't want to sit here and pick on Emmett Matthews, but the last game was, I think it was TCU, where I had this stat where it took until the 14:21 mark of the second half for him to record a statistic. A positive statistic, like as in a point, a rebound, an assist, a block, or a steal. Until 14:20 of the second half. That was his 18th minute on the court before he did anything that contributed to the team, at least statistically. Like, that can't happen. Like, it's almost impossible to not have a single statistic of that, of one of those categories in almost a half of basketball. Like, at some point, a rebound is going to bounce your way. At some point, somebody's going to make a shot when you pass it to them. At some point, you know, you're going to get fouled and make a free throw or something. But then you look at the next like 4 minutes and he gets 8 points, 2 assists, a rebound, and a block, I think. Like, it was just like, oh, there he is. He's awake. And that's kind of how I feel about a lot of these guys on that starting five, is when they're on. But I can't guarantee any of them would be in my closing five because of that.
On Matthews, his only statistic at that point was 0-for-1 from the floor, which is not a positive stat like you're talking about. What you're saying is things that he actually did. Missing a shot doesn't count, but he wasn't even like 0-for-3. He didn't miss a free throw or miss 2 free throws. He didn't even have a turnover. Just nothing. Just an abyss for some reason. All of a sudden, he turns it on. I am with you. I don't know who would deserve to start over their five starters, but beyond that, two things strike me. One, if you play those five guys, you'll know pretty soon, I think, not if they have it collectively, but individually, who's on and who's not that day. And for proof, look at their past two road games. Did a hockey line change at Texas Tech, and then for some reason didn't against TCU. They were in that game for much of that first half. But that's two road games. Maybe it's just the road, but the starting five just didn't have it. But at different points in that game, I know the bench was had the heroic day against Texas Tech, but it was a 15-point game at the end, and the starters did a lot of work to win that one over. And then TCU, bench didn't do a whole lot there. They got the starters together. My point being there that keep your starting five together, because those are your five probably best players as far as like an overall quality. And figure out right away who's got it and who doesn't, and where you have to fill things in. And number one, number two, can you imagine having to break in Kedrian Johnson or Emmett Matthews or Jimmy Bell off the bench right now? Like, what's that learning curve like? I don't think you can afford that right now. Whereas a guy like Toussaint, Seth Wilson, James Okonkwo, they're pretty accustomed to the bench. And again, conversely, imagine putting them in the starting lineup right now. You seem like you're having two negatives there, which don't necessarily make a positive if you start subbing starters for subs. No, that would work. That's very risky. And then again, like, how do you get to the finishing five, you got to be aware of the entire game. And we've seen them really kind of gear toward that because they've had some odd configurations at the end of games, like sitting Matthews and Mitchell at the end of a game. That's pretty significant. And they haven't been afraid of doing stuff like that. So I do think they have their thumb on that. And it's very hard to predict. The one thing that makes me curious is lineups. And I'd be curious. I'm not saying I'm endorsing this, whatever, because I think they are pretty much a 1-2-3-4-5 team at their best. But they've messed around with 2-point guards. They've played 3 guards. They've done the small lineup. They've done the 2 bigs. But it's been so sporadic that I'm not really sure there's a plan every game or if it's an opponent thing. And sometimes I don't even think it's an opponent because what we think may work or would look good or have a chance doesn't even get on the floor. As far as a wrinkle, Chris, is there some, maybe not personnel, but some number combination, 2 guards, 3 forwards, 3 guards, 2 centers? Is there something like that out there that would get your attention? Because I think there's something to Bello Okonkwo, much as I think that there's something to, for example, Toussaint Stevenson Wilson in the backcourt. There's some offense and some defense there. There are some concerns too, don't get me wrong. But in addition to that, is it too late to be trying things like that? Or is it late enough that desperate times, desperate measures?
I need to see these numbers. I don't think I've seen them anywhere, but have Wilson and Stevenson played a single minute together? Like, are they literally, like, you know, one in, one out kind of thing?
Let me answer your question with a question.
Uh-huh.
Shouldn't they have?
I think they should have. I mean, yeah. if the biggest problem you have is shot creators or shot makers, that may be the route you want to go. And I get that Stevenson has been up and down. Like, I mean, through in non-conference play, he was shooting like 45% from 3 and then fell off a cliff and then made 7 against Auburn and then had a bad game against TCU. I get that. Shooters are streaky. I mean, you wish he was a little more consistent, of course. Wilson, kind of similar way. But if you give, like, Wilson, Stevenson, and you have Trey Mitchell out there, those are 3 guys who can pretty consistently, at least, you know, at some point you're going to get 2 out of the 3 making shots from deep. You can spread the floor on guys. I like that kind of combination, because the other one, and one I know we've seen, and I'm intrigued by it, but I don't totally love it, is the Keedy and Toussaint backcourt combo. Like, defensively, sounds great. 2 ball handlers, 2 great ball handlers, sounds great. But I'm not sure either one of them is like a top end 3-point shooter. I know they've made them when they're open and they can kind of force their way there, but they're both shooting around 30% from beyond the arc. Like, it's not excellent. It's not that's not the guys you want shooting all the time. For example, even with Stevenson's like horrendous Big 12 shooting Auburn's not in the Big 12. So outside of the Big 12 shooting, with all of that, still shooting 37%. Mitchell, even with him kind of being missing some lately, 38%. And Wilson, again, streaky shooter, 42%. So I'd rather get those 3 on the court, try to get some offense going, than try out some other things with more ball handlers, more one-on-one guys, which has been – that's when West Virginia's offense is kind of stalled, is when guys get one-on-one. And so this Keedy and Toussaint combo, it intrigues the heck out of me, but I think it might do more harm than good.
I think with Stevenson, we have to recognize he's played good basketball in a recent stretch. And what does that mean? If he's a shooter and he's not making shots, so that's not good basketball. That's true, but he's been part of some good lineups. He's passed well. He's rebounded. His defense is going to be neither great nor embarrassing, but that's not his purpose to be out there either. So he's a little bit like Sean McNeil, who once said, they didn't bring me here to play defense, which was true, but probably not the thing you want to say. But he's got a spot. But the trouble is, you put him and Wilson together, you know, that's an iffy backcourt too. That's not the fastest, biggest backcourt there. And then you're going to see some athletic ones too. Too bold to say they cannot lose tomorrow night at home against Oklahoma and make the tournament?
Not too bold. I mean, I think you lose to Oklahoma, then what you are asking this team to do after that in order to get in the tournament is likely unrealistic.
Okay. Let's go to barttorvik.com, barttorvik.com. You can mess around with a whole bunch of their stuff they have there. Right now, that website has West Virginia as a number 7 seed, 96.3% chance to make the NCAA tournament. Has them going 18-13 overall, 7-11 in the conference, counting wins: Oklahoma, Iowa State, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, Kansas State. Those are all home games, right?
Yes, it is. So 5-4 down the stretch. Again, that'd be tough. But if you went 5-4, like how much? I don't know how much emphasis they put on, you know, the final 10 like they used to, how you finish the season. But still, finishing 5-4 in the Big 12 conference, like that's something. Because I'm looking at it right now, you got 6 games against teams ranked inside the top 13 nationally remaining.
Oh yeah.
So if you can get 5-4 in these final 9 games, you're in. Period.
Okay. Oklahoma, on Bart Torvik's first teams out ranking, 20th. not great. If West Virginia were to lose this game, they drop from a 6 to a 9 seed. If West Virginia wins, excuse me, from a 7 to a 9 seed, if West Virginia wins, rise from a 7 to a 6 with a 97.7% chance of making the tournament. If Oklahoma does what it oftentimes does and beats West Virginia in basketball. Are you aware of the recent run for Oklahoma, by the way, against West Virginia?
I am not.
7-0, Chris.
I won
7 straight,
by the way,
against West Virginia.
I am aware of it. I wanted to let you take it.
Okay. So if West Virginia loses an 8th in a row, they drop from a 7 seed to a 9 seed, the last 9 seed, and their likelihood of making it goes to 80%. And then more because of that, subsequently, their likelihood of winning the next few games is much lower. It still has them winning the home games. Actually, hasn't losing Iowa State yet after that. Again, if you can't beat Oklahoma at home, you might not beat Kansas State at home. So does Bart Torvik decide who gets in the tournament? No, but it's a simulation you can look at based on numbers and saying how valuable one game at the beginning of February is against a team that has just had West Virginia's number lately. Can't lose it. Can't do without this win. And it feels wild to say that the first game of the second half of the schedule is a game you absolutely have to have. How do they go about, you know, skinning this cat, slicing this bread? I don't know, but like they played okay last time, but Chris, they played without that center last time. That was the game they played the final 10 minutes of the second half without a center. They had Trey Mitchell as the de facto 5. They made something like 10 out of 13 shots and outscored Oklahoma 27-23, I believe, down the stretch. Not a great plus minus, but it kept him in the game and almost won it for him. And here we are again. We haven't seen that since. I wonder if we see that tomorrow.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I think you'll see that. I think you'll see some James Okonkwo looks. Again, if he's a guy that you think is a slighter big, you know, like a smaller five man, which Huggins has kind of indicated, obviously putting him out there with like, as like a four next to Wagi or something, then maybe you see Okonkwo get some more time, or you flip it and go the exact opposite way and try to use Jimmy Bell like as a complete mismatch. I don't know, but yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing the lighter look, the smaller look and trying it out. I mean, if you need offense, that might be the way to go. I know Huggins loves to get the ball inside, pound it inside, get on the post, all that stuff. But sometimes you got to do something you don't like to do just to get it done.
Switch to football, if that's all right with you, Chris.
Yep.
Signing day comes, goes, one signature through the fax machine. Maybe a month ago, 2 months ago, it's a bit of a surprise in that the name is one that West Virginia was going to keep an eye on for sure, for different reasons. But hey, big legacy defensive lineman, can't have enough. Neil Brown, this is interesting to me. Neil Brown said if you weren't in the December signing class and you were committed, you probably weren't going to be in the February one. Then he said in the next breath, they'll never be in a position to turn down defensive linemen. Here comes Corey McIntyre Jr., who was committed, didn't sign in December, signs in February. But it's not like one of those things where he was waffling and let me take my visits. There's a story there, but also here's a big body that has some potential, certainly has some genes that help. And here he is in the recruiting class.
Yeah, there were two guys who were verbally committed at the December signing period who did not sign. And they had two drastically different stories. We'll start with Corey McIntyre, who, again, did sign in February. And he told me a few days before the December signing period. Again, I reach out to all the recruits, like, hey, what time are you signing? I'm making a list, all that stuff. And he says, you know, hey, Coach Jackson asked me to wait. And I was like, oh, are you taking visits, doing other things? No. Just, you know, need to get some more progress on his core GPA. And again, this is different than your regular GPA. This is different than the sliding scale with your ACT, SAT, with your GPA, because the core GPA is a very specific handful of classes that you're required to take to be eligible in college. And, you know, it's going to get rid of some of those more superfluous high school classes where you're getting an A in like woodworking and you're getting an F in math. Like, that's bad. Like, it's focused more on the math and the science and the English than it is woodworking and all that other stuff. So it was, I believe it's 2.3 you have to have. And it seems that McIntyre is around that area. They asked him to sign in February, so they must think there's at least a possibility that he is going to be fine. It's just going to be one of those situations where you're going to have to watch it all the way up until the moment he gets on campus. Because whether he got above it or is still below that line, I don't know, and I don't think it matters right now, because either way, you're going to be, I guess, sweating out this last semester just to make sure he gets on campus. And if he does, great, because again, like noted, NFL bloodlines, WVU bloodlines, a very good player, productive player that has played against some top-notch competition down there in Florida. You know, Treasure Coast plays an extremely tough schedule, like even by Florida standards. And McIntyre kind of held his own, and I think he's a good addition to this class and somebody that you could see make a difference in a couple of years.
What's left? Does it depend on who leaves the portal? Is it still as easy as receiver, cornerback, OL/DL? I know it's space dependent, but they're going to have more than they have right now. You've covered that in depth before. They can still do a little bit of shopping. They can't buy anything right now, so to speak. Probably more accurate than I lent that, but portal opens up again May 1st. I would imagine spring football ends everywhere. People are going to be rushing in based on what they were not able to do as far as depth chart, playing time, new coaches, old coaches at their current place. They want to go somewhere else. West Virginia, open arms, I guess, but hasn't been as easy as just saying, hey, we're open for business, come and play for us. They're going to have to prove some things, but not a whole lot's changed there either, right?
Nah, not a whole lot. Again, nobody else has been able to enter the portal since January 18th. So you're still looking at the same pool of players, actually even smaller, because a lot of guys committed and signed and, you know, will enroll at their new school come May. But there are still a few options there for West Virginia. And West Virginia, yeah, it's cornerback, like absolutely no doubt. Wide receiver, they're still looking at. Offensive line, that seems to be a thing. Again, we've talked about it before. To me, I feel like this offensive line room is as good as it's been since Neil Brown arrived in Morgantown. They got all five starters slated to come back next season. But they're still out there offering and actively recruiting guys who are, you know, were starters and only have 1 year of eligibility left. So they are on dudes to come in and start right away. Now, where that is, I don't know, because a couple of the offers have been centers, and I don't think they're going to start over Zach Frazier. So I'm interested to see, you know, if maybe they're trying to slide one of those guys out to guard. Maybe that's like, hey, you're not sure if rematch is ready yet at left guard. Who knows? We'll have to see. But they're going hard after legitimate, game-ready, high-level offensive linemen right now.
Sort of have to, no matter what. You can't have enough of them. And let the world on fire on the offensive line either. Let's not forget that. They've had some issues before, too. Another year would be great, sure, but you wouldn't mind solidifying that a little bit, too. More to the future here for West Virginia, Big 12 football. Finally has some clarity, I guess, on Oklahoma, Texas. We knew they were going to be part of the league, at least for the upcoming football and basketball season, the whole next upcoming athletic year, because the schedules were coming out and they were on them. I'm not sure that was the delay necessarily for the Big 12 schedule. There's TV deadlines and things like that, like Fox and ESPN want to know soon. But now the Big 12 meetings are happening in Dallas, I believe, somewhere in the Metroplex. And news out this morning, last night, that Texas and Oklahoma will stay throughout the contract, which means two more years, Chris. They want to leave. I wonder, what do you think the offers are like? Is it like, hey, we'd like to leave, here's $5, take it or leave it? Or we can just, like, you know, not give you anything and we'll just walk out of here in 2 years? And does the Big 12 have any responsibility to try to make some money off of this, at least at or beyond the level of what a productive second season, final season of Oklahoma and Texas gives you? So, like, if you can quantify that, I don't know what it is, but let's say that football, basketball, any other sports for Oklahoma are worth $100. I don't know the accurate number, so I'm not going to say it, but we'll just throw a stupid number out there, $100. Don't you have to try to get $100 out of this rather than zero? And at that point, wouldn't $75 be better than zero? Wouldn't $50 be better than zero? It just seems weird to me to be in a financially concerning situation like the Big 12 is, when you're trying to look at other leagues. How much are we getting annually? How much does that mean to our current and maybe prospective members? But also, we need to fill the coffers. Let's try to get as much cash as we can out of this while we can. They're leaving anyways. Who cares if it's 1 year early? Sooner the better for us. We'll make some cash on it.
So let me ask you one quick question before I answer. If Texas and Oklahoma say they leave right now, and obviously they're not, but they're leaving right now, they're not even going to do 2023. Does the money that the Big 12 makes from their TV deals go down right away?
I don't think they can do that, especially because the quantity of the teams is up too. So I'm not sure that that's actually permissible. And if they leave early, they have to pay. They basically leave their money behind. Now there's a negotiation there where they say, well, we'll just stay and we'll take everything and you make nothing. And she tried to find a number somewhere there, but I get your point. Like, would it be worth less than what's the negotiation figure there? It's a good point. I don't have an answer there, but I don't think they can actually lower that. I don't think they can. I'm not positive, though.
Because my thought is, you know, if Texas, Oklahoma are like, we'll pay you $100 combined to leave, but then ESPN's like, hey, if they're gone, we're going to pay you $150 less, then the Big 12 is not going to do it. And so I think, you know, whatever that number is, if it could affect the contract, if it could affect TV revenue from ESPN and Fox over these last 2 years, then yeah, it is in the Big 12's best interest to try to get in payment up front, whatever that amount is, plus one. You know, if ESPN says we're going to pay you $50 less each year for these next 2 years, so $100 less total, if you're the Big 12, you're like, all right, Texas, Oklahoma, $101, $102. So maybe even just $100, because it's, you know, present value of money and all that stuff. Get it up front, lump sum, which, again, I don't even know if you'll get that. They always work something out. But yeah, I think it depends on whether or not the TV partners can lower the revenue for these past couple of years, because you have to get back at least what you might lose from the TV deal. And if you're not losing anything for the TV deal, then yeah, I'd take whatever Texas and Oklahoma, like if you can still get, you know, whatever, again, let's make stupid number, $20 billion from ESPN and Fox over the next 2 years, even without Texas and Oklahoma, you take whatever money you can get from Texas and Oklahoma. So, but then again, if I'm Texas and Oklahoma, what's my incentive? I mean, I know you're going to make more in the SEC, but if you stay in the Big 12 and you're still getting $40 million, $50 million, and the SEC is going to pay you 60, why, you know, you're not getting out of the Big 12 deal for 10. So why leave? Just wait it out.
Yeah. More power to him. It's going to be very awkward. I wonder, I mean, you know how like these college basketball officials love to officiate numerous games? Could you turn Keith Kimble, Doug Sermons, and Chance Moore? You might know them as the Three Blind Mice. Could you turn them into football officials and just put them on the Texas and Oklahoma crew every week?
You could. I like that you're bringing this up, since that's been the hot topic around the message board for the past week, with them posting Higgins's schedule.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible. His Marriott points and Hertz Club Gold and all that stuff has to be through the roof.
He's probably got one of those like 10-pound Marriott cards that you only hear about.
Finally. Actually, are we done with that? Like, do you have more takes on this? Because I feel like this is a big deal that's not getting a whole lot of attention. Like, but I also don't know what the, I mean, that's a heck of a barge in a narrow body of water. I don't know how you turn this around and get them out of the conference at this point, but like, man, they're darn what they do and they're darn what they don't, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is, it could shift a bunch of stuff. It could shift up all sorts of movement a couple years early. But again, what's going to, like, I don't think either side is incentivized to cave to the other, because the Big 12's going to want money and Oklahoma and Texas are going to look at it and go, well, why would we pay $100 million to leave when we're only going to get back, you know, $60 million, or what? Like, what's the point of that? And then the Big 12 is going to say, why would we, you know, if you can lose money out the Big 12 deal, why would we accept any payment if we're going to lose even more from ESPN and Fox? So I think it's just this, a matter of both sides looking at each other going, this ain't a good deal for me. And it just kind of, that was it.
I also think that Chris Del Conte and Joe Castiglione are two of the elite athletic directors in the country. I know it's easy at places like Texas and Oklahoma, but Del Conte was before Texas and Oklahoma. He's just a good AD. I would not be surprised if this was a little bit of gamesmanship and leverage, and it gets out, and all of a sudden there's some hue and cry from people smarter and more important than me. I don't know about you, Chris, but definitely me. And then all of a sudden some presidents and ADs in the Big 12 were like, hey, fix this. We don't want them around another year. That could be a play here too.
I got one more thing for you
from
this deal. You see the Big 12 schedule releases, and everybody put out their own little thing with a video and some graphics and all this stuff about their schedule. There were two teams who did not, who simply just retweeted the Big 12's announcement that the schedules were out.
Really?
Yep. Oklahoma and Texas. You think that's just literally that petty? Like, we just don't even care about this league anymore. We're not even going to spend like our resources to have a graphic designer make a video.
I guess the value of a schedule announcement tweet differs in a lot of corners of college football. Have you seen Houston's?
Yeah, I did.
Love it.
Yep.
Love it.
I always think those are fun that a lot of people do. It's good.
Yeah. Just can't get punched in the face and not counter, but that's another conversation. Finally, one of my favorite and also least favorite stories here, Chris. The NCAA finally has its hands on the NIL legislation and enforcement. Are you ready?
Go.
Guilty until proven innocent. Never in history has this been a good idea. In history of the world has this been a good idea. And the NCAA is about to put it into college sports, which is one of the stupidest things I've ever heard, but also seemingly inevitable. Last summer, they were coming up with these ideas about, all right, we need to get more into NIL. We need to police it better. This is not the intent, even though we had every opportunity to apply intent and we didn't. And it seemed to me they were calling schools for it and saying, we will help you, but we need you to cooperate. We need you to turn people in. And wrote about this. I had some feedback from people in compliance, and they were like, kind of right, but it'll never happen because what's the incentives for schools to tell on others? Because inevitably, it's going to be hard for a school to be committed, or excuse me, by to be, what's the word? Found guilty, I guess. I know what acquitted means. It's going to be hard for a school to be found guilty by the NCAA just because the NCAA stinks at this stuff. Now the NCAA, it appears, when it comes to NIL and the intent, is going to just take reports from other schools and then compel the accused to prove evidence, to provide evidence that it's not true. And there's been some reporting out there this week online, and you can Google it and find it. It's incredible, Chris. This seems like a terrible idea that's actually fast-tracked.
Sorry, I was so excited to respond to this. I hit mute, the mute button twice.
Oh, okay.
Unmuted and muted myself back.
Okay.
Mike, can we set up a draft? God, I wish we had more time to figure out which coach is the narc. Which coaches wore wires to the AFCA coaches convention to try to get people to admit, on tape what they've been doing and who they've been paying. Like, do you have a pick for who's the biggest narc in the Big 12?
I from the Big 12. I don't know. I have a few when it comes to the NCAA at large or college football at large. Big 12.
You know, Randy Edsall's not coaching anymore, right? Or is he?
In his mind, he is. He's doing the Mike McCarthy thing where he's holed up in a bunker somewhere with his like faux staff trying to get everything ready for his next swing at the pinata.
Okay.
I will listen. Here's just an anecdotal thing for you here. West Virginia was ticked off about Akeem Mesidor, maybe even Daryl Porter last year, and just didn't know what to do about it. If this happened this year, all they have to do is call the NCAA and say, hey, we think that they tampered, and we've had some conversations with people. We probably have a few pieces of correspondence that we can lead you toward. And then the NCAA could use that to accuse the Hurricanes of something here untoward and say, hey, West Virginia believes that you meddled in Akeem Mesidor and maybe Daryl Porter. And we're very concerned about this. Are you aware of the level 2 violations, perhaps level 1 violations? You need to prove West Virginia wrong. You need to acquit yourself. And then, Chris, how does that go? Like, hey, can you show me the text messages from assistant coach A to Akeem Mesidor? Absolutely not. I'm not doing that. Oh, and then you go to the player and his handlers and say, hey, we understand that maybe there's some accusations that this player, you know, was given some money from a booster. Can you provide that? And then the high school coach or the prep school coach can be like, pound sand. I'm not helping you. And then you're like, oh, all right, well, how about the boosters? Let's go to the boosters. And the boosters are going to laugh. I don't know where this goes, except that, like, you're probably going to have to. And this is, here's my thing, is that the NCAA is, like, showing teeth, but they're false teeth now. And it just gives you another level of bluff calling for the schools, which seems inevitable to me. Because I can't imagine that you're going to get hit with a violation and then sanctions. And that the school is going to be like, it wasn't proven. We live in a democracy. I'll see you in court. And then you get injunctions and restraining orders, and all of a sudden you're off the hook for the infractions. And the NCAA is just backspinning to where it was before, which is doing a whole lot of nothing. I don't know if this is sound and fury that signifies nothing or sound and fury that signifies a really concerning chapter when it comes to, like, not just NIL, but enforcement in general. This is incredible. I can't believe this is happening. Like, it's a place that has no ideas. And that said, you know what we should do? Let's get a bad idea and run with it.
All right, I think we can rule you out. You're not the narc.
No,
we'll but rule you out.
Like, how petty? I mean, a petty coach who loses a recruiting battle can just be like, "Hey, my rival cheated," and then she doubles me like, "I think you're right." Like, that seems. I mean, it's probably not going to be that simple. I'm sure there'll be a little bit more jurisprudence there, but like, you can see how these things are going to go. And like, listen, Lane Kiffin's been very open about this, so I'm not talking out of turn here, but they got beat out by Texas A&M. He said for a number of recruits. If that stuff happens as often as it does, like, I think schools that lose out are going to be able to find receipts and provide receipts now. And is that going to be good enough? Even if it's real, is that going to be good enough? I don't know. And I wonder if it makes it easier for schools to cooperate. Like, hey, you don't have to go, like, you don't have to testify. You can just accuse. You can point the finger. Like, it's the old, like, now you're the person behind the dark glass. And you just have to point out the person in the lineup now. You don't have to ever go in front of a jury and testify or anything. You know, you don't have to worry about your safety or whatever. I really wonder where this is going to go. It seems crazy. It seems inevitable that the NCAA is going to do something, and probably not the most intelligent thing. And here we are. And it's, again, I cannot believe this. I think I sent this to you and I was like, I was chuckling, but also like really concerned when I sent it to you. Like, this is amazing. I can't believe this is happening.
Can you not, though? I mean, it's the NCAA. Like, anything's possible. Anything. Wait, who's in this whole scenario? Which coach is Tony Soprano? Who's going to start snuffing out the rats here?
Well, Saban will be the pick, right?
That's what I was thinking. Or is he one of the old school guys? It's been a long time since I've seen some Sopranos episodes, and I wasn't always the guy who watched every single one. But one of the older mafiosos.
Maybe he's like an Omerta guy. Yeah. Vow of Silence. James Franklin strikes me as a guy that probably would speak his mind. There's a lot, man. I don't want to say anything negative about people I don't really know very well, but like, I'm just thinking about like perceptions and was that reality? I'm not sure, but I've heard things about different coaches that I could probably come up with a few. Would it be great if like what if Kirk Ferentz is just the guy wearing the wire? He's the Joe Valachi. He's just the guy who's like, that's why he's around. Like, how does that guy still have a job? He's got all the great intel. He's the one who goes in the meetings, wears the wire, and he's a great resource for the NCAA. Stay tuned to this one. I don't know what the reactions will be as it's developing, it's coming out. I'm assuming it'll be formalized sometime soon. But again, you're right, Chris. Inevitable, and is it surprising? Probably not. Is it sad? We'll see. On deck, Bob Huggins, some players previewing the can't lose game against Oklahoma. Chris, about a minute to go here. What's up your sleeve?
More recruiting stuff. I mean, dead period's coming, but for those who are big on recruiting, I literally have about 24 interviews done and stories that just need to be written and put up. So there's a lot of recruiting stuff coming. Saturday night, Oklahoma, move on to a new week.
You got a lot of stories. That means I get time off, right?
Yeah. Aren't you about to take vacation? I am.
Yeah. I will have the wheel this weekend. Until then, I'm Mike Casazza.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
Good catch, Chris. Until then, see you then.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.